for both true presentations and other stakeholders. And we also have in attendance other stakeholders from different departments. And maybe before I allow them to do the presentation, it will be proper to know who is here. My name is Cheta Mofokeng. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development. I'll allow honorable members to introduce themselves and then the team will also introduce themselves.
Thanks, Chair. Morning. My name is Tunga Matila, a member of the committee from Gauteng, the city of Thoni. Thank you.
Morning, everybody. I'm Zelima Kasana Manzini, a member of this committee, and I'm also from Mpumalanga. Thank you.
My name is Matona Afrimohori, a member of the committee from Limpopo.
Good morning. My name is Jacques Becker. I'm a member of this committee, and I'm a delegate from the Western Cape. And it's very nice this morning with all the women around us. Thank you.
Goedemorgen, ik verstaan van Jacques. Jacques kan zo praten. Ik zie er recht om zo te praten. My name is John Guna. I'm from the Northern Cape. I'm from Uppington, the hottest town in South Africa, but from the friendliest people.
The leader of the delegation may introduce himself or herself.
I'm Gary Sykes, I'm from the NPA.
Good morning, my name is Patricia Whittle, I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, Morgan Courtney, I'm from the Child Justice Alliance.
Good morning, Honourable. My name is Edmund Foley, also from the Child Justice Alliance.
Good morning. My name is Rose September, and I represent the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities this morning.
Good morning. I'm Susan Pina from the South African Police Service.
Good morning. Charmaine Balnor from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development.
Good morning. My name is Steven Masalesele from the Department of Social Development.
Good morning. My name is Bafana Linda from the Southern Police Service.
Good morning. My name is Britta Rotman. I think it's Claire. I'm from the Department of Correctional Services.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Coria Cook. I'm the Director of Administration in the Office of the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And just again, apologies from the Director General not being able to attend personally today.
Good morning, Chair and House. My name is Lester Basson. I'm the Chief Master, but I'm also acting DG for Justice at this stage. Thank you.
Anthea van der Burg, Content Advisor to the Committee.
Good morning, my name is Gershwin Dixon, I'm the Secretary for the Committee.
Good morning, my name is Luana Lula, I'm from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you very much. Who's going to lead the presentation? Is that you, Ms. Balema? Okay, you can go ahead.
Thank you very much. In this presentation, I'm going to focus on the purpose of the presentation, the background and the overview of the implementation of the Act, the governance structure, the achievements on the key priority areas as identified in the National Quality Framework for Child Justice. I'm going to highlight some of the limitations being experienced in the implementation of the Act, and then also on some of the new developments during the third year of the implementation of the Act. Now, the purpose of the presentation is to give a brief overview of the progress in the intersectorial implementation of the Child Justice Act, which reflects on the achievement and limitations recorded during the third year of the implementation, and also to give a comparison analysis of the intersectoral performance, mainly in the past 2 years of the implementation of the Act. Now, the Child Justice Act 75 of 2008 came into effect on the 1st of April 2010, and was mainly to introduce a child justice system that ensures that children are treated in a manner that takes into account of their age, as required by Section 28 of the Constitution, and that also underpins the values of the Constitution, underpinned in the Constitution and international instruments which South Africa is party to. The Act provides for special measures to divert children in conflict with the law from the mainstream of the criminal justice system to the child justice system that is capacitated to assist them to break from the cycle of crime so as to mature into law-abiding citizens. And the Act also provides then for those children that cannot be diverted from the criminal justice system to be dealt with in child justice courts. Now, Section 96(3) of the Act requires the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development to table in Parliament the annual progress report on the implementation from the Act, and each department then has to compile a separate or individual annual report on the implementation of the Act, and the departments then is the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the National Prosecuting Authority, the South African Police Service, the Department of Correctional Services, the Department of Social Development, the Department of Education, and the Department of Health. In the governing of the implementation of the Act establishes an intersectorial committee for child justice, which must meet twice a year, and it's chaired by the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, with the Deputy Chair, the Minister of Social Development. Director General of Social Development. In order to monitor the implementation of the Act, there has been a decision to establish a national operational intersectorial committee for child justice, which meets monthly and is attended by representatives of all the national departments that is part of the Director General's intersectorial committee on child justice, and further structures that have been put into place to be able to monitor the implementation of the Act on ground level or provincial level, and nine provincial child justice forums have been established in each province, and they meet also at least once a month to discuss the issues revolving around the implementation of the Act in the provinces. And then if there are challenges that they cannot deal with in their provinces, these are escalated to the National Operational Intersectorial Committee. And if those issues can still not be resolved, it is escalated to the Director General's Intersectorial Committee for Child Justice. Now, the National Policy Framework was approved by Parliament in 2010, and it, as required by the Act, and it identifies 10 priority key priority areas which the Intersectorial Committee for Child Justice has to report on in order to monitor the implementation of the Act. Now, these priority areas of building capacity in the sector, and this relates to both building skills capacity in the sector as well as infrastructure capacity. It's also one of the second priority area is ensuring assessment of children, preliminary inquiries, sentencing, the provisioning of diversion and alternative sentencing services, the establishment of child and youth care centres, the establishment of one-stop child justice centres, resources and budgets, public education and communication, and the development of necessary IT and IJS systems to support the information management relating to children in conflict with the law and those going through the child justice system. Now, during the year 2012-2013, a total of 7,278 personnel from all the reporting stakeholders were trained, and the total number of personnel being trained since the implementation of the Act in 2010 stands at a total of 45,292 personnel. The next slide give a breakdown of the different implementing departments personnel that were trained over the 3 years, and in the 2010-2011 year, then 24,349 people were trained. In 2011-2012, 13,665, and then 2012-2013, 7,278. With regard to the infrastructural capacity, the Act provides for the establishment of one-stop child justice centres, which falls within the mandate of the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development. Now, since the implementation of the Act, three of these centres have been established, with the last one in Klerksdorp and Matosana one-stop child justice centre were promulgated and opened during the 2012-2013 year, which brings the total at three. And then the Department of Social Development's mandate is to establish child and youth care facilities for both the detention of children and also to cater for those that were sentenced to compulsory residence in a child and youth care centre. During 2010-2011, with the implementation of the Act, there were 28 centres that were fully operational, and this was the last financial year. It is still 28, but there are further two that is in the process or under construction, and they will be fully operational during this the 2013-2014 financial year. And the bed capacity in these centres, during 2011-2012, it was reported that the total bed capacity was 3,272 beds, and in the 2012-2013 year, the total bed capacity was 2,100, and so there were less bed capacity during the last financial year. And this is because the minimum norms and standards require each secure care facility to have a bed capacity of 60 to 120 beds, depending on the size of the infrastructure and the resource capacity. And this is to avoid overcrowding. And the Department of Social Development has put mechanisms in place to ensure compliance with this minimum norms and standards. And this exercise resulted in the reduction of the bed capacity at the available centres, but this will increase during the 2013-2014 financial year, with the two additional centres that will become fully operational. The establishment of one-stop child justice centres, Section 89 of the Act regulates the establishment of one-stop child justice centres and provides that the Minister of Justice may, in consultation with the Minister of Social Development, Police and Correctional Services, establish these one-stop child justice centres. And as I indicated, one was established during the 2012-2013 financial year. Because of the costs involved in establishing these centres, a decision was taken to look at existing buildings that can be converted into one-stop child justice centres. But it was soon realised that there was a lack of facilities because of the requirements that these one-stop child justice centres have and other practical challenges. So the Department of Justice has now initiated a process to conduct a viability study on the continuous establishment of these one-stop child justice centres, and to see whether we should continue taking into account the costs, and also to see if there's not another model that can also be implemented to try and still serve the children in conflict with the law, but with a lesser budget and resource requirements. So on the 14th of April, the operational ISCCJ, the Intersectorial Committee on Child Justice, conducted a workshop to explore the challenges on the intersectorial establishment and management of the one-stop child justice centers, and we drafted a baseline document for the viability study, which will be conducted within the next few months. Now, the assessment of children plays a very important part since the implementation of the Act, and something new, if I can call it that, a requirement in terms of dealing with children since the implementation of the Act. The purpose of this of assessment is to establish whether a child is in need of care and protection, and whether the child should then be referred to the children's court, to estimate the age of the child if the age of the child is uncertain, and also to gather information about previous convictions, previous diversions, or any pending charges against the child, and also to make recommendations on whether the child should be released if the child has been arrested, and or whether the child should be detained, and if so, whether the child should be placed in a child and youth care center or in a correctional services facility pending the finalization of the case. The probation office must also make a recommendation on whether expert evidence will be needed to establish the criminal capacity of the child if the child is between the ages of 10 and under 14, and also to determine whether the child was used by an adult to commit a crime, and to provide the preliminary inquiry and all the decision makers in the process of dealing with the child in a position to have all the information that they need to be able to make an informed decision as to how to deal with this child. Now, since the implementation of the Act, there has been an increase in the number of assessments that were conducted. During the first year, there were a total of 32,500 assessments. During 2011-2012, there were a total of 18,334 assessments. And during the last financial year, 2012-2013, there was a total of 32,125 assessments, which bring the total of assessments since the implementation of the Act to a total of just under 83,000 children. Now, there are some factors and corrective measures that were introduced by the South African Police and the Department of Social Development that contributed to the increased number of children assessed. In terms of the Act, as soon as the police apprehended a child, be it through an arrest or a written summons or a summons or a written notice to appear before court office, child has allegedly committed a crime, the probation officer must inform the police officer immediately. The police must inform the probation officer immediately of the apprehension to enable the probation officer to do the assessment. During the year 2011 to 2012, the number of charges against the police that were the children that were reported by the police was 68,078 children, and in 2012-2013 this decreased to 57,721. Now, it's important to note that these are not the number of children that are coming into or entering into the child justice system. This is the number of charges. So it is possible for one child to have more than one charge against them. So what the police report are the charges and not the children. these local service agreements have been introduced between the police stations and probation officers to outline operational commitments that expedite the management of children on a 24-hour basis. Because basically the Act expects of probation officers to be on call 24 hours because the police must inform them as soon as they've apprehended or arrested the child. Then there's also a directory of local designated probation officers was developed by the Department of Social Development, and this is was made available to every local police station to enable them to contact the probation officer when needed. There's also an electronic information system that's currently available which allows the Department of Social Development to be informed via a system-generated email of all children who should be assessed, those that the police have apprehended. However, efforts are in progress to improve the system by incorporating an acknowledgement functionality of the sent email to DSD just to be sure that they did receive it. DSD has developed a system for the full solution via service-oriented architecture. So after the child has been assessed, the child must appear before a preliminary inquiry, which is essentially regarded as the child's first appearance in a criminal court. The preliminary inquiry is an informal pre-trial procedure, which is inquisitorial of nature, because the inquiry really wants to know about the circumstances and the individual circumstances of the child and gather as much as possible information to be able to be in a position to make a decision regarding the way that the child should be dealt with. Now, the purpose of the preliminary inquiry then is to consider the probation officer's report regarding the estimation of the age of the child, where the expert evidence will be needed to prove the child's criminal capacity is between 10 and under 14, and also whether the probation officer is of opinion that there needs to be a detailed assessment of the child to be done, and that this usually occurs where the child is regarded to pose a danger to others or to himself, or where the child's social welfare history is of such a nature that it warrants a further or a detailed assessment. The preliminary inquiry must then also make a decision if the child has been arrested about the release of the child and whether this should be done in the care of the parents, the guardian, or the appropriate adult who's accompanying the child, or whether the child should be released on bail or on his own recognizance. And if the decision is not to release the child, the preliminary inquiry magistrate must decide about the child's detention, whether it should be in a child in youth care centre or whether it should be in a correctional facility. The preliminary inquiry can also must also then decide whether this is a suitable case for diversion before plea, and if so, identify a suitable diversion option at this stage. And it is also to encourage the child and the child's parents, the guardian or appropriate adult, to participate in the decisions affecting the child throughout the process. Now, all cases must be sent to a preliminary inquiry, except in instances where the prosecutor decided to divert a case before the preliminary inquiry, and this is usually when it's a Schedule 1 offence, which is a petty offence or one of the least serious offences in terms of the Act. Or if the child is under 10 years, they do not go through a preliminary inquiry process, or if the prosecutor, after looking at the docket, decided to withdraw the matter and not take it any further. Now, in the year 2012-2013, a total of 25,517 preliminary inquiries were conducted, and those that were referred to the children's court because the child was regarded as a child in need of care and protection were 3,856 children. And then if the matter during the preliminary inquiry, if the matter was not withdrawn or diverted or sent to the children's court, the matter must be referred to the Child Justice Court for a trial. And in 2012-2013, a total of 10,821 children were referred for trial in the Child Justice Court. If we look at the number of preliminary inquiries conducted over the past 3 years, in the first year of implementation, there were 14,471 preliminary inquiries. There was an increase in the 2011-2012 year to 17,822, and then you get another increase in the 2012-2013 year to 25,517 preliminary inquiries. As I stated, in terms of Section 50 of the Act, the inquiry magistrate may stop the proceedings and order the child be brought before a children's court if it appears that the child is in need of care and protection, or if the child is alleged to have committed a minor offence aimed at meeting the child's basic needs for food and warmth, which basically makes him then a child in need of care and protection. Now, legal aid services in preliminary inquiry, during the period, legal aid services were offered to 15,295 of the children appearing in the 25,517 preliminary inquiries that were conducted in 2012 and 2013. So you can see that in about 10,000 cases, children did not have legal aid at preliminary inquiry stage. And this is because the Act does not make it pre-entry for children to be legally represented during the preliminary inquiries, only when, in terms of Section 83, when the child appears in the Child Justice Court, that the child cannot waive his right to a legal representative. And Legal Aid South Africa do provide legal aid services in all cases where it's deemed necessary for the child to be assisted at the preliminary inquiry stage of the proceedings, but they do not have any dedicated practitioners to assist with preliminary inquiries yet, but those that are available at the courts do assist children if it is necessary to protect the child's best interests. Diversion is one of the central points or focus points of the Act. It's basically the channeling of prima facie cases from the formal criminal justice systems, and there are various requirements before a matter can be considered for diversion. First of all, the child has to acknowledge responsibility for the commissioning of the offence, and the child must not have been unduly influenced by anyone to acknowledge responsibility. There must be a prima facie case against the child, so there must be enough evidence to convict the child on the information in the police docket. And also the child must consent, and if his parents and guardian and appropriate adults are available, then it's also consented to the diversion. And the prosecutor and the director of public prosecutions must also indicate that the matter can be considered for diversion, or the matter can be diverted. There are different levels of diversion for the different schedules of offences in the Act. And when a Schedule 2 or Schedule 3 offence is being considered for diversion, the prosecutor or the director of public prosecutions must also obtain the views of the victim before diverting the matter, as well as that of the investigating officer. Now, during the first year of implementation, 2010-2011, there were a total of 16,462 diversions. And during the second year, 2011-2012, there were a total of 9,192 diversions. And 2012-2013 year, there were 11,420 diversions, which totals the number of diversions since the implementation of the Act just over 37,000. And this reflects an increase of 2,228 diversions in the third year of the implementation of the Act. As I said, one of the central features of the new criminal justice system, or child justice system, that's been established for children through the implementation of the Act is the creation of the possibility of diverting matters involving children in conflict with the law away from the criminal justice system, and the increase in the number of those diversions is therefore regarded as an important step in achieving one of the overall aims of the Act. All children or children committing any kind of offence can be considered for diversion. There is no exclusion of offences that children commit. If the child's circumstances and the circumstances of the offence is a matter that is suitable for diversion, the child may be considered for diversion. The Act also provides for the accreditation of diversion service providers and diversion service programs to ensure that the programs being offered to children that are diverted are good quality programs to ensure that the children do not reoffend or that they that the causes of them committing crimes are being addressed through attending these programs. The accreditation framework was introduced in 2011-2012, and then 215 programs were accredited in 2012-2013-89. So since the implementation of the Act, a total of 304 programs have been accredited, and service providers that have been accredited is 79, candidacy programs is 58, the C service providers is 37, and the programs that were declined for diversion was 36, and the service providers that were declined were 15. Since the rules of the accreditation framework has been implemented. Now, one of the aims of the Act is to and that's a value that's underpinned in our constitution and in the international instruments that South Africa has ratified to protect the rights of children is that detention should be used as a measure of last resort and only for the shortest appropriate period of time. Now, since we see from this slide that before the implementation of the Act, there was a lot of children in correctional facilities awaiting trial or remand detention, and this is significantly dropped since the implementation of the Act. And last year there were only a total of 135 children awaiting trial in correctional facilities. The next focus area is sentencing. Now, the objectives of sentencing in terms of the Act is to ensure that the child is held accountable for the harm caused through the commissioning of the offence. It is to promote an individualised response that strikes a balance between the circumstances of the child, the nature of the offence, and the interests of society. It aims to promote the reintegration of the child back into his family and his community, and to provide guidance, supervision, treatment, and services towards the successful integration of the child into his community and family. Now, the Act provides for various sentencing options, which is catered to meet the special needs of children. First of all, these community-based sentences which restorative justice sentences found in alternative confinement, conventional supervision, compulsory residence in a child and youth care center, the postponement or suspension of partial of sentence, and then imprisonment. If one looks at this slide, it is clear that there's been a constant increase in the non-custodial type of sentences being imposed on children since the implementation of the Act, and the imprisonment sentences have significantly dropped. From the first year of implementation, there was 536 children sentenced to imprisonment, and this dropped to 2012-2013 to a total of 98 children. the data for the postponement and suspension of passing of sentence were not available during the first 2 years of the implementation, but since 2012-2013 we've been able to collect that data and to report on that. And there was also a drop in the number of compulsory residents, children sentenced to compulsory residence in child and youth care centers. So there's a growing achievement of the goals of the Act, which primarily promotes the imposition of non-custodial sentences instead of imprisonment sentences. And since 2010, a total number of 5,120 non-custodial sentences were imposed on children. And then, as I indicated, the significant drop in the number of children sentenced to imprisonment from 536 to 98. The drop can be reflected on this slide. The ninth key priority area that I'm going to focus on is public education and communication. One of the aims of the Act is to deal with children outside of the criminal justice, with children in conflict with the law outside of the criminal justice system, and to reintegrate and rehabilitate these children back into their communities and families. And to be able to do that, it is important that we as a sector get the buy-in and the support of the communities and the families where these children and the general public where these children come from. And one of the ways that the implement departments are trying to achieve this is through the public education and communication initiative. I'm going to highlight a few of these initiatives that were done during the 2012-2013 year. First of all, there was a radio broadcast campaign between the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in partnership with the National Prosecuting Authority and the South African Police Services, which gave information to the community members or the listeners about information about the Act, and this was broadcasted on 65 radio stations. The National Prosecuting Authority also participated in a special assignment program on television, which mainly focused on diversions, and the aim was to highlight to the public that diversion is not a soft option for child offenders, that we often experience when a child commits a serious offense, that is usually what the public's view of diversion is. In November 2012, another radio panel discussion on the Child Justice Act was conducted, where GCIS connected analysts with 8 radio stations. Listeners from all these stations were able to call in and have their questions answered. And then between October and November 2012, the NPA staff members participated in the NPA GCIS radio campaign coordinated by the communications unit, where radio station interviews were conducted covering different topics in the criminal justice system, one of which was the Child Justice Act. The last key focus area is the IT and the Integrated Information Justice System. Now, different departments have implemented or in the process of developing different information systems to suit the needs of the department in terms of the Act or to comply with the requirements of the Act. The Department of Justice having integrated case management system child justice, which has about 80 fields to capture information relating to the department, and the National Prosecuting Authority data that had to be collected in terms of the Act. The Department of Social Development for the probation case management system and the accreditation of diversion system. The probation case management system, the purpose of that system is to monitor the child assessment, and then the accreditation diversion system is to monitor the diversion accreditation. Legal Aid South Africa has got an information system ad infinitum, which captures cases and they are able to generate reports from there, and it also reports the training of the legal representatives because it's got an e-learning module attached to it. The South African Police System's got OPAM, which is the operational planning and monitoring system, which enhances the system currently being implemented. It captures the information of children that under the age of 10, because the police cannot arrest or take these children into custody or deal with them in any way. They just have to hand them over to their parents, appropriate adults or guardian. And if they can't do that, they have to hand them over to a suitable child and youth care centre. And this is just to capture the information, because the probation officer also has to be informed immediately once such a child has been handed over to either the parent or the child and youth care centre. The integrated information justice systems between the police, the IJS, the Department of Justice and NPA, they've got various systems, the pre-adjudication docket integration, where the South African policing up to 90,000 docket ready notification to the National Prosecuting Authority, but these relate to all cases and not only to child justice cases. The charge sheet notification system, the postponement date integration, and their purpose is then to just to notify the NPA about the or to notify everyone about the postponement of the case. The South African Police, IJS, and Legal Aid South Africa, they've got a Legal Aid request notification, which is operational in 120 of the South African Police facilities. The police and DSD got the arrest notification system, where they inform probation officers that the child has been arrested or apprehended and that the child needs an assessment. And then the Department of Correctional Services has the admission and release system, which captures warrants and other detention issues, and the community correction system, which captures all those that were placed under the non-custodial system. Our key limitations in the implementation of the Act has been highlighted in this presentation. First of all, with regard to the Department of Justice, is that, that there are no existing government buildings that are suitable for the conversion into one-stop child justice services. And the corrective measure in this regard is to do a viability study, which we are in the process of being conducted. And then as soon as the study is completed, depending on the recommendations of the study, the national policy framework will have to be amended to follow the recommendations of the study, and also the national guidelines for the establishment of one-stop child justice centers, which have been developed to assist all the stakeholders in establishing these centers, will have to be revised depending on the recommendations following the study. The Department of Health, since the inclusion of criminal capacity into the Child Justice Act with the implementation of the Act, there's been an increase in the number of children being sent for the evaluation of their criminal capacity, because that's one of the factors that the court has to take into account before diverting a child, or before the prosecutor has to take into account before prosecuting a child between the ages of 10 and under 14. Now, with this increase in the number of requests for evaluations, the Department of Health experienced a serious shortage of psychologists and psychiatrists who are the categories of persons determined to do these assessments. And as a result, they rely on private clinical psychologists and psychiatrists, 54 private clinical psychologists and 32 private psychiatrists. And these charge the Department of Justice beyond the policy rates that we are paying for expert witnesses. And in the interim, the department is in the process of securing additional funds for the courts to be able to pay for these services. And then hopefully with the review of the minimum age of criminal capacity, which must be done within 5 years after the implementation of the Act, this whole issue of criminal capacity and the Dodo Incapax presumption will be dealt with, and maybe that will eliminate this challenge. The Department of Education, in terms of the Act, all the reformed schools and schools of previously known reformed schools and schools of industry have to be transferred from the Department of Education to the Department of Social Development. Most of these centers are in the process of being transferred, but there are some challenges being experienced in some of them, and then in other legislative amendments are required to allow for these proposed transfers. With regard to the IJS system, the fully integrated electronic data collection system is progressively being developed, and the 4 systems are in the process of being integrated into the IJS system to allow for the data from the different implementing departments to be able to reach one another and to be shared between all the departments. With regard to the Department of Correctional Services, difficulties in providing formal education to remand detainee children, because almost 90% of them spend less than 6 months in detention, and these children have never been to school. The Department of Correctional Services is in the process of determining a model that can be utilized to ensure that education is provided to these children. Some of the new developments relating to the Child Justice Act is the amendments that were made, or that's in the process of being made to the Act. They were included in the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill 7 of 2013. This bill was approved by the Portfolio Committee on the 2nd of October. Some of the amendments was aimed to give effect to the Constitutional Court order in the matter of the Centre for Child Law versus the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development and others. And this relates to the reference in the Act being made to the Criminal Law Amendment Act 105 of 1997, or the Minimum Sentencing Act. Other amendments also that were made in this regard, or that's in the process of being made, is that Section 85 was reviewed to revise the automatic reviewability of cases where children were sentenced to compulsory residence in child and youth care centres and imprisonment. There were conflicting decisions in the provincial high courts of the different provincial high courts, and this was just to eliminate that confusion. And then also with regard to the evaluation of the criminal capacity of children, the amendments now aimed at allowing different categories of people to evaluate the different the developmental aspects of a child when doing a criminal capacity assessment. Another issue that I just want to touch on is the court case regarding the Bishu Secure Care Facility, the judgment that was given on the case that was the urgent application that was lodged on the 2nd of August 2013 in the Eastern Cape High Court by Cornelius Huysen, which was the applicant, and the MEC for Basic Education Eastern Cape, as well as the Provincial Department of Social Development and 4 others. This basically relates to some problems that were being experienced at the centre, and regarding the education, the provisioning of education to children in the centre. The fact that there was not a lot of the skeleton staff, as they refer to it, and also that the security surveillance system at the centre was not operational, and the children absconded at night and committed crimes in the surrounding community, and they also brought back drugs and used it at the facility. So the court were approached on an urgent basis, and the children, the 40 children, were removed from the centre and are being detained at the correctional facility in Kirkwood. The case was postponed on various days, the 15th of August, the 5th of September. It was again before court on the 19th of September, the 3rd of October, and the 17th of October, and the 31st of October. And these performances mainly revolved around the fact that the court requested the respondents, the Department of Basic Education, the Provincial Department, and the Department of Social Development, to file reports in answering on the allegations, and also to develop implementation plans to be put into place to put the centre in a position to be able to look after the children and to detain the children as they are supposed to. And the matter is again before court on the 31st of October, and Kirato Atlipton has been appointed to protect the best interests of the children, and the departments and the applicants legal representatives, which is legal aid, are in the process of trying to resolve this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Presentations, and I would like them to first finish their presentation and then we'll engage later. Can we allow the Department of Women, Children and People with Disability?
Good morning, Shane. Good morning, honorable members. The department, the minister acknowledges and thanks the chair for the opportunity to support its oversight function as requested. The purpose of this presentation is to support the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development pertaining to the implementation of the Children's Act as requested. This presentation is based on the outcomes of the combined fourth report on the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child. These reports were approved by Cabinet on the 4th of September and is being processed to DIRCO for depositing to the respective committees as we speak today. The Department's reporting mandate includes the monitoring of the implementation of the international and national laws, policies and programs. The Department actively participates and in the coordination structures of the ISCCJ, as referred to during the presentation just presented to the committee. Beyond this, the department is also responsible for the monitoring and reporting on international and regional obligations of the country. It is within this context that we provide the committee some reflection on the outcomes of the UNCRC and the AU reports pertaining to the matters of the implementation of the Child Justice Act. South Africa ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child on the 16th of June in 1995. The fourth combined report was due on the 15th of July this year and is in the process of being deposited to the respective committees. On the 18th of January 2002, the optional protocol on the Convention on the Rights of the Child on the sale of children, child prostitution and child pornography entered into force. The country ratified this protocol on the 30th of June in 2003. We have just submitted a report as well to DIRCO in this regard. In accordance with Article 44, South Africa is obligated to submit periodic reports on the measures adopted and progress made in terms of the realization of children's rights. South Africa also ratified the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child on the 7th of January in 2000. In fact, it would be the first report that we in fact is processing as we talk. The Minister Singwana informed Cabinet on the 21st of September 2011 about the status of the CP reporting on children and the process towards fast-tracking the outstanding reports. This now has been done. The development and consultation on the three reports concerned happened simultaneously during 2011 and 2012. Extensive consultations were conducted with the national government departments in all provinces, including government and civil society. The UNCRC and the AU reports were approved by Cabinet, as I said, released to Parliament and the public on the 5th of December 2012 for comments. Further inputs in the form of submissions were subsequently received during our public commenting period and incorporated into the final report. The reports were approved by government clusters and was submitted to Cabinet for approved and approved by Cabinet on the 4th of December. It is now en route to be deposited to the respective committees by DIRCO. These reports, ladies and gentlemen, constitute a barometer on how the nation is progressing on the realization of children's rights and well-being. Overall and in general, South Africa has made notable progress to accelerate the implementation of international treaties signed on the realization of children's rights. One of the most significant improvements since our last report was the establishment of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disability with express mandate to coordinate, monitor and promote monitor the mechanisms for children in the country. There are currently 18.5 million children in South Africa. Almost 80% of these is under the age of 18 years. Using a lower bound poverty line, which is equivalent to 575 rand per person per month, estimated in 2010, 60% of our country's children are poor. In terms of the administration of the matters pertaining to child justice, according to Article 37A and 40, the child justice aimed, as reported earlier, to establish our own Child Justice Act is aimed at establishing specialized courts for children and establishing a minimum age of criminal capacity that is responsive to the needs of children, needs and protection of children. And it entrenches the principle of restorative justice. I must emphatically say at this point in time, South Africa has been internationally renowned for the progress it has made pertaining to the implementation of the Children's Act. The Special Rapporteur on the UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Children and Violence of Children in particular has commended South Africa on numerous occasions on the effectiveness of the not only the legislation, but also the mechanisms that it established to protect children in the juvenile justice system. There are, however, and the report indicates that there are a number of gaps within the scope of line departments that should be noted and aligned to the next MTSS and strategic plans to be monitored in the next MTSS cycle of government. These are indicated in full in the report. For example, the review of legislation and policies to harmonize the legislative provisions in terms of the age and gender, the review of the age of criminal capacity to 12 years old, as required by the UN and the AU, also in terms of the alignment of the age of child marriage per the recommendations of the treaties, UN and AU treaties. There must be much more investment into the prevention of children in the child justice, criminal justice system. improvement of the mainstreaming of social protection measures for poor children. It is recognized that many of our children, as been reported this morning, find themselves in the criminal justice system as well as in the child care and protection system. We need to see more improvements in terms of the intersectoral institutional arrangements and coordination of child rights delivery architecture on a national, provincial, and municipality level. We need to see more joint programming. During the UNCRC consultation, the issues around more effective case conferencing between justice, social development, SAP has been noted as a key point for further improvement. The improvement of monitoring and evaluation capability on a national, provincial, and local spheres, and in particular in all government departments, to respond to government's accountability and reporting obligations. Emphasis was also placed in terms of the need for closer alignment between the Child Protection Act and the Child Justice Act. We've seen, and here I really want to commend the department for the improvements that has been demonstrated here today in terms of the progress made on the joint assessment by the probation officers and how that is going. Actually seems much better than it was a couple of years ago. Then the strengthening of the court that deals with children, in particular the issues of about intermediaries to facilitate children's effective participation. There needs to be much more emphasis on the training on intermediaries, also the resources that is needed to make sure that in all magistrate case courts there are intermediaries available to do this important function. The provision of the adequate infrastructure to have those courts much more functional in terms of, for example, more microphones and the general upgrading of facilities in terms of the court facilities for children. There's been a lack of measures and focus on children with disabilities, and we need to make sure through our monitoring systems of all the government departments that efficient and effective attention is paid to the needs of children with disabilities that find themselves in court proceedings. The issue of least restrictive options, if we note that the government departments and the legislation asks us to use the least restrictive options, then we must also pay much more attention to children who are placed under supervision of guardians, either their own foster care or other guardians. We need to strengthen the supervision, and that relates to children in the that's left into or that are in the care, placed in the care of their families. Much more focus needs to happen and be placed on supervision and the availability of social workers to supervise those placements. This also relates to the support that is needed to be provided to NGOs that are responsible to supervise children who are in the child justice system. Lastly, physical and psychological recovery and social integration remains of concern. The Department of Correctional Services has a comprehensive multidisciplinary services available. However, it is recommended, or it was recommended during the UNCRC process, that these services must be evaluated during the next financial year to ensure that the children who are in DOC care or are in prisons or sentenced receive comprehensive multidisciplinary services to aid them in terms of the recovery, but also reintegration into their communities. Pertaining to the educational services for children on remand, as pointed out in the previous presentation, there has been a number of concerns noted in terms of the fact that children who are on remand do not necessarily receive the needed educational support services while they're waiting trial or while they are in the processes of being remanded for specific outcomes. Then consideration of regularized monitoring and evaluation, oversight engagements pertaining to the child justice system. The recommendation here during the UNCRC consultations was that there should be much more oversight paid within by all the government departments itself, but also independent monitoring and evaluation engagements to ensure that the care and protection of the children in these child and youth care systems are guaranteed. These evaluations or oversight visits should be recorded and presented to Parliament on a regularized basis. This will enhance the process towards the review and further improvement of the implementation of the Child Justice Act. And finally, we must once again acknowledge the dedication and hard work of all the online staff, the NGO sector, senior management, and the ministers who provide the ongoing inspiration and support to a sector that remains very challenging and under-resourced. We commit ourselves as a department to continue our own monitoring and support services to both government and civil society. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Can we now allow the Child Justice Alliance?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, before I go into our presentation, I'd just like to, on behalf of the Child Justice Alliance, thank this committee for inviting us to speak and to present our views and the challenges that we have seen in this sector. My presentation will loosely be based on a shadow report that we had Dr. Charmaine Barnos before she left our sector to work at the Department of Justice. It will loosely be based on that and the findings as per her report. So we do have copies available if anyone doesn't have one yet, just to kind of as a reference point. I think to start off, little doubt exists within the Alliance that the introduction of the Child Justice Act has revolutionized how we deal with children in conflict with the law. Moreover, the Alliance is elated to see the progress and the strides being made within the sector, and I think that we must acknowledge that from the outset, that there have in fact been fantastic strides made in this field, particularly if one has a look at the sharp decline of children awaiting trial, the sharp decline of the child prison population, the increased use of non-custodial sentences, the use of diversion programs for serious offences, and the increased protections afforded to children by way of special review procedures. And I think that overall, the Alliance is happy to see that those systems are working. But obviously today, we have noted concerns, and those are the concerns that we would relay to the committee in order for us to strengthen capacity within our sector and to ensure that the objects of the Child Justice Act are met at the end of the day. Now, the successful implementation and administration of the Child Justice Act is largely dependent on two important conditions being met. Firstly, that each department fulfills his or her mandate, and secondly, that there is close cooperation and collaboration between the implementing departments. In order to evaluate whether or not these conditions are in fact being met, it is also vital that reliable and accurate data be forthcoming so that we can properly evaluate and monitor and ensure that the Child Justice Act is being fully implemented. In the 2.5 years, now almost 3 years, the Child Justice Act has been in operation. Various implementation-related challenges have arisen. And what I will do now is just discuss three broad points that we have particular focus on. The first is the issue of training and the training of the various role players. The second will be the decrease in numbers of children entering the system, which will be tied to the issue of diversion. And thirdly, I will briefly just discuss the Alliance point of view on the upcoming review on the child, on the minimum age of criminal capacity. Now, the National Policy Framework for Child Justice provides that the training of those dealing with child justice is one of the key priority areas for the effective implementation of the Act. Key role players include the South African Police Services, probation officers, prosecutors, legal aid lawyers, magistrates, and correctional service officials. Insofar as the South African police services are concerned, it is important to bear in mind that they are the gatekeepers to our child justice system. This is so because more often than not, they are the first points of call for communities, business owners, and victims of crime when a child is alleged to have committed an offense. They are also tasked with the apprehending of child suspects and having them brought before court in order for them to be dealt with. They in particular are therefore in need of specialized training when it comes to dealing with children in conflict of the law. It is also important to bear in mind that the South African Police Service does not have specialized units that deal particularly with child offenders, and it therefore falls to the responsibility of all members within the South African Police Service. And last I checked, there was 157,518 members to be trained and be conversant, particularly in the area of child justice. It's also important to bear in mind that any training that the South African Police Service receives, it should also be assessed in terms of quality, and qualitative studies should be undertaken in order to assess that on an ongoing basis. In the first year of implementation, the SAPS provided training to 15,891 members on the Act. In the second year of implementation, the SAPS provided training to approximately 14,060 members. In total, this only represents a very small percentage of the number of SAPS members who have been trained. The overall figure sitting at a mere 29,000 as of the second annual report before I've seen today's stats, or 19% of the total number of members. And including today's stats that I learned today, it would bring our total up to a 22% of the members, of all members of the SAPS have been trained in the Act. Now, we have been involved and had numerous discussions with SAPS regarding their training, and the Alliance is happy to note that there has been an increased emphasis, and particularly in the current year. We are seeing an increased emphasis on the need for training and a mass rollout of training within the ranks of the SAPS. Despite this, we, however, remain concerned from the anecdotal evidence received from various Alliance partners that despite this increased emphasis on training, that many relevant personnel are still falling through the gaps when it comes to training. We have found that the persons being trained are often people who would not be on the front line when dealing with dealing with child offenders. Also, it would seem as if many of the leadership structures within the police stations, on the station level, are also not being trained for one or other reason. And that would obviously include your station commanders, shift commanders, and also your detective services, who play a very important role when dealing with pointing out and admissions by child offenders and the regulations and the law regarding those issues. The fact that so few SAPS members have been trained, and those trained are not always the relevant members in need of training, highlights a serious gap in the Alliance's view to the successful implementation of the Act. In addition, it would appear that there are currently no qualitative studies being done in order to assess whether or not the 22% of SAPS members that have already received training, in fact, are conversant in the Act and are able to apply it on a practical level. But I must also, instead of just focusing on SAPS, it is also important that all partners who deal with children in conflict with the law are trained. Obviously, SAPS as a gatekeeper, it is vital, but what one is slowly seeing is that there is also gaps appearing in both prosecutors being trained on the Act, legal aid lawyers being trained on the Act, probation officers and magistrates who are seemingly misunderstanding the principles of the Child Justice Act. And briefly, whilst preparing for my presentation, I went over a couple of cases, and there's a relatively recent case from the Western Cape High Court in a case called S versus Snaders, where the Western Cape High Court pretty much gave the magistrate involved, the prosecutor, and the probation officer a dressing down for the fact that all three of those crucial role players had failed to adequately apply the Act to the particular circumstances and to draw the provisions or to properly interpret the provisions of the Child Justice Act. It would seem as if from the judgments at least that none of them even knew that the Child Justice Act was in operation. So it is concerning when one sees that, especially also at that level. So an increased emphasis should be placed on the training of all stakeholders. Insofar as the decrease in number of children entering the system is concerned, one of the primary aims of the Act is to prevent children from being exposed to the adverse effects of the formal criminal justice system. And one of the ways in which this is achieved is by providing for an increased emphasis on the use of non-traditional forms of securing a person's attendance, or in this case, a child's attendance. And that obviously includes the issue of a written notice and the use of a summons. However, this emphasis on the use of non-traditional forms of securing attendance has seemingly caused some confusion in the rank and file of the South African Police Service. And it probably owes the fact that the improper use of arrest, unlike it was done under the old dispensation, may very well lead to civil liability. And I think, while the Alliance is concerned, that may in fact be spreading through the ranks and resulting in children not being arrested or not being dealt with at all when they commit an offence. And once again, that may be one of the reasons as to why we are seeing a decrease in the number of children entering the system. If one has a look at these stats, in the first year of the implementation, a total of 75,435 children were charged by the SAPS. And having regard to what the earlier speaker said about it being the number of charges rather than the number of children, I think that in itself is a problem that is worth noting. There does seem to be a discrepancy. In one report, it does amount to the number of children charged, and in others, the number of charges. And like my colleague correctly pointed out, the number of charges, a single child might have three or four charges. That does not necessarily mean that there are that many children entering the system. So the numbers are way off. But just by way of example, if one considers that in 2010-2011, 75,435 children were charged with, that would translate to roughly about 6,286 children entering the criminal justice system per month, which is substantially lower than the 10,000-odd children that were entering the system prior to the implementation of the Act, as was reported to Parliament in 2008. If one then goes and has a look at the 2011-2012 stats, one sees, again, a further decrease. In that year, 57,592 children were charged or charges were leveled against children, and this in turn translates to roughly 4,799 children entering the system per month. And that is a decrease of 23% on the previous year's statistics and approximately a 52% drop since the 2008 stats were released. Now, in the 2.5 years since the Act has been brought in operation, numerous reasons have been put in various forums and to Parliament as to why the number of arrests have dropped. And those have included the South African Police Services making use of alternative methods of policing children, that since 2010 the number of crimes in general have dropped in South Africa, and owing to this cyclical nature of crime, that being in the summer months there is more crime and in the winter months there is less crime, and that this is are some of the reasons that we have heard is the Alliance coming through for this huge drop in the number of children entering the system. However, we hasten to add that none of these seem to be convincing, especially if one considers that post the World Cup we saw a decrease of 26% on the previous year's statistics, and it just is not realistic. And I think many of us, whilst we might sit and hope that the number of children committing offences would decrease and would become almost zero, and that our system would effectively deal with them, I think that is unfortunately not the case in this. I do think that children are still committing offences at the same rate that they were prior to the enactment of the Child Justice Act. Unfortunately, 3 years or 2.5 years is just too short to see how well our Act will work. And I think that if we do not rectify that situation, we might very well end up with children escaping the child justice system and the rehabilitative and reintegrative effects thereof, and committing offenses later on in life because they have now gotten used to almost getting away with the offense. And I think that if one just examines our prison population and the youth group, so the 18-plus group, 18 and 25, one quickly sees that there is a death population of those type of offenders in jail, and for quite serious offenses. And they do not just simply start committing offenses at that age, unfortunately. It is a product of their childhood. So it is vital that we ensure that children who need services and the services rendered by the Child Justice Act are brought into the fold. We don't want to exclude them and leave them for another day. It is important that we stabilize the numbers, and I will move on to recommendations at the end of my presentation as to how the Alliance thinks that can be achieved. In particular respect of diversion, and one of the most contentious issues at this point in time, is what is the status of diversion within South Africa, and why are we also seeing decreases there? And what the Alliance has noted is that there has been, if one considers the trend analysis that was conducted by the Intersectoral Committee in the period April 2009 to December 2009, and then again in April 2010 to December 2010, it shows that there was an overall decrease of 24% of the amount of diversions, or the number of children entering into diversion programs. This is also confirmed by the Child Justice Alliance partners, where they have also noted significant decreases over the year of the number of children entering into the system. In the second year of implementation, just by way of figures, the number of children diverted decreased a further 44% overall since the implementation of the Act. And the question that one needs to ask and answer is the use of diversion decreasing, or is it proportional to the amount of children entering the system? Unfortunately, there is research underway to investigate that, and I do know that the Department of Justice is currently working on that, and hopefully we'll have an answer, because if the answer is that it is proportional, then at least we know that the diversion services are working. If it is not proportional to the decrease, then we also know that there is another flaw in our system, and that is that children are not being diverted as often as they were under the unregulated system. And one would have to consider how one goes about rectifying that. Interrelated to the issue of the decrease in the number of diversion service, or the decrease in children attending diversion, is the unfortunate byproduct, and I mentioned it a bit earlier, and that is the closing down of many of our Alliance partners' offices. And this is purely based on the funding models currently being employed by the Department of Social Development and how they determine who or how funding is allocated. It generally moves along the number of children coming through one center. This effectively, or this has the potential of denying many children caught up in the cycle of crime the opportunity to benefit from the various programs on offer from the Alliance partners, as well as other partners within the sector, including the Department of Social Development and their programs. It must be kept in mind that the drop in number, as I said earlier, is probably just a result of the teething phase that we're currently experiencing in the Act. There is a lack of training, there is a need to a greater understanding on how the Act works, and that will come in time. But if we do not resolve the issue of funding of, well, in my case, the NGO sector, who are providing diversion services, then what might end up with is, as soon as we start seeing an increase, we will all be scrambling to try and find money in order to have those systems put back in place. And what we would recommend is that at this point in time, we should utilize this calm to regather, invest, and consider how to better the programs we already have on offer. And in that way, we do not need extra budgets, but that we maintain the status quo and that we revise the funding model in order to ensure that when the numbers do pick up, and unfortunately I am confident in saying that they will, once we are over this hump, that we still have systems in place to care adequately for all the children coming through the system. The last issue insofar as diversion is concerned concerns to the issue of accreditation. Our Alliance Service Provider Partners have relayed many concerns regarding the accreditation process as prescribed in the policy framework for the accreditation of diversion services in South Africa. They maintain that the policy as it stands is too rigid and there is little or no flexibility resulting in an increased cost for diversion service providers, that the application process and systems are labor intensive and complex, that the institutional structures are costly and non-governmental organization representatives are not reimbursed for participation in all provinces, resulting in either a withdrawal of their application or additional costs having already been added to their limited resources. A further issue that has been picked up by our partners is that provincial site verification and quality assurance committees do not adhere to uniform assessment standards across the provinces. This has sometimes led to the provincial MEC's offices for social development making unreasonable demands on the Alliance partners. The problem with the accreditation process and things to consider in relation thereto is that the policy should in effect allow for some flexibility here and there in order to ensure that it is tailor-made to the particular area that it is in. One cannot expect a world-class facility that only a big metropolitan would be able to afford to be flung out into one of our rural areas where the services are needed in order to aid the children who come into conflict with the law. The last issue that I just wish to touch on and is the issue of the revision that will be coming up in 2015. I don't mean to jump the gun on that issue, but as an alliance, we are concerned that there isn't enough debate going on about this issue leading us up to the 2015 debate about whether or not or what we are going to be doing with our with the criminal age of responsibility question. We would urge this committee and all committees that are charged with dealing with this issue to consider researching international trends on this issue so that we can see where the rest of the world is going. We would also ask that particular attention be paid to our international obligations under the UNCRC, and particularly how they have been distilled by the Committee on the Rights of the Child, their general comment number 10, which deals with the issue of age and capacity. And it is important that whilst we are collating the data, which I do believe is slowly being filtered in, and we are slowly getting statistics as to how many children between the ages of 10 and 14 are committing offences and how many of those are being found criminally responsible, that whilst we are collecting that information, that we do have robust debates about whether or not we should lower the age to 12 or we should keep and abolish the daily income tax rule, or whether or not we should simply maintain the daily income tax rule and narrow it off somewhere else. But as was demonstrated earlier, I think that the Department of Justice's presentation highlighted is that there are serious challenges when it comes to assessing criminal capacity. There are budgetary implications. Unfortunately, there are no government service providers who can provide that service, and justice is being tasked with footing the bill for private medical practitioners in very rare cases of children between the ages of 10 and 14 being charged. So it is important that we begin that process now already so that when we get to 2015, we are prepared to discuss it in a responsible manner that takes into account all the information that we have. Insofar as recommendations go and leveraging on the presentation, I think that the first issue that would need to be addressed or the first point of priority would be the collection and collation of reliable statistics. That seems to be the one thing that keeps unfolding when we look at the stats is that stats do not always line up. Stats, the way in which the various departments report are substantially different from one another. And whilst I am aware that the departments are currently trying to develop an integrated management tool
I think that it is important that that is not progressively done, but is done with immediate effect. Otherwise, we won't know at the end of the day what we are dealing with. For as long as the numbers don't tally, we end up with half a picture and not a full picture as to where our system currently is. And that obviously informs policy making and drives the legislative agenda for the review of the Child Justice Act that is to take place in a couple of years' time. There is also the need for the increased number of officials being trained in the Act, and the relevant officials, those on particularly on the ground level from SAFSA's side, their detectives and their station commanders and so forth, prosecutors and probation officers. There needs to be an emphasis on that training. It once again goes that we cannot implement this Act successfully if those who we have tasked with implementing it are not aware of what they are supposed to do. And just by way of an example, I had a discussion with a person who shan't be named, who works within the South African Police Service, and there had been a rumor going around of a senior member advising them, look, the Child Justice Act is incredibly complex, don't arrest children, you'll save your job. And those are the kind of things that we are seeing and hearing as a life partner from ordinary members. So it is important that that is rectified, because obviously that is not the truth, and there are ways and means in which that can be addressed. So it is something that one would need to have a look into. Insofar as diversion is concerned, while foresight research is currently underway by the Department of Justice in order to determine whether or not the overall decrease in the number of diversions is proportional to the decrease in the number of children entering the system. And we can only truly gauge and make recommendations on this issue once we have those statistics available and be able to consider how best to plan our interventions. For now, though, the Alliance is concerned with the accreditation process, which is hampering many of our partners. And we would urge that a revision of both the funding models as well as the policy take place in consultation with those service providers who make the services available. In that way, the grassroots level organizations will inform the policy that will then be applied. And in that way, we hope that that issue might be resolved and that the service providers are able to continue giving a good service to the children who do come into conflict with the law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The young in prison.
Thank you, Chair. Well, just by way of introduction to the committee, because this is our first time to engage with this committee specifically, Young in Prison is a non-profit organization that runs life skills programs within correctional service centers and child and youth care centers that are run by the Department of Social Development. We are very much an activities-based organization in that we work on the ground and we work with the children themselves and the young people that come in conflict with the law. Our specific mandate is to do a reintegration program where we do rehabilitative programming for those that have been sentenced or are awaiting trial and track them through their reintegration process. We'll try to facilitate a way where they reintegrate back into society, either by going back into formal education, training, or finding employment for those that are over 18. Just for your way of information, page 1 to 3 will give you more information on what we specifically do, so I'll jump to the key issues relating to what we are talking about today. In terms of the Child Justice Act, for us specifically, we, of course, everyone is impressed of basically the passing of the Child Justice Act in itself and its contents and what it has been mandated to do and its policies. However, for us on the ground and our experiences of the implementation, somewhat mixed feelings. One of it, and I mentioned two key areas for us specifically in terms of trying to do what we can do and, you know, in terms of us limiting criticisms to the government agencies that are mandated to implement, is that the information gathering, capturing, and distribution of it is not clear to us, so we do not get as much information. And this is particularly in terms of even the annual report, the last annual report that we have in our possession and that we could access, even from the committee itself, we could only get it from up until the end of 2012. So when we attended here, we found information that leads up to, you know, up to the end of financial year in 2013, that leads up to 2013, which we didn't have access to. And that, of course, hampers even our way of engagement with the departments in terms of how do we know we don't have information of what sometimes is happening, current information, and, of course, that affects us in terms of engaging on whether, you know, progress has been made and what needs to be improved. We commend, of course, some of the departments in terms of, you know, the fact that they've tried to use integrated management systems in terms of especially electronic and leaving the manual way of doing things. But I note specifically in terms of the South African Police Services, which is the first port of call in terms of engaging with the child when the child is arrested. And they're the ones that, of course, we rely specifically to then distribute these children to secure care facilities for assessment, to court procedures and all of that. And if they're still using, you know, manual ways of gathering information, for us, we are unable to at least tabulate what exactly is going on to the children. And we, of course, note specifically to what the Child Justice Alliance has mentioned in terms of children, basically, like the arrest numbers. We are concerned about that in terms of decrease, especially as an organization that offers services to these children. We believe that interventions should happen to children who come in conflict with the law. There is a reason why a child is arrested. There's a reason for intervention while a child is arrested, is coming to conflict with the law. And that means most of these children, like the Department of Women and Children has mentioned, that all children that come in conflict with the law are in need of care. They're in need of care somehow, somewhere. Someone has failed them. And if we are not getting information to assess those things and to properly get in contact with them and in touch with them, we are unable to offer the services. And hence, they continue to offend or to come somehow into trouble till they're 18, where it's too late for the Child Justice Act to properly assess and to help them. And they end up, of course, being dealt with by the Criminal Procedure Act and ending up in proper prisons where DCS is responsible for, and coming into control with, in contact with hardened criminals, which is something that we do not want. So in order to avoid that, we urge the committee and we urge the intersectoral members to at least find ways to manage and to gather information and to distribute it so that we are able to be in possession of it and to be able to properly also give recommendations. So it was quite difficult to engage with this and come with proper recommendations because you know you're dealing with data and statistics from 2011, 2012, and you want to be dealing with current information so that you properly and, of course, fairly assess the implementation because probably the Department of Social Development is doing something much better than they did in 2011, and you're not aware of it except what you currently experience. I move on to the capacity of the child and youth care centers. In particular, we pay attention to the child and youth care centers because those are the things that we engage with and the places. And particularly, the first thing that I would like to mention is the Department of Social Development. I do not know whether it's the attitude or it's misunderstanding of their role as Department of Social Development in terms of their mandate with them managing child and youth care centers, particularly in terms of the last annual report that was tabled with the intersectoral implementation on the Child Justice Act. They submitted about 5 pages or 3 pages. They contributed 3 pages to the annual report, as opposed to other departments like the Department of Correctional Services that actually submitted 15 pages. And I do not know whether there was a limitation. I wasn't sure whether there was a limitation to them to what they could submit, because all we could find on the annual report was the fact that they submitted on accreditation processes and how many trained staff members. You couldn't get any qualitative information on as to the quality of services that are rendered to children in child and youth care centers. And that is, of course, concerning for us because we need to understand the role that they're playing, and since they're the ones managing this child and youth care centers where the children are housed. So we definitely encourage the committee, or at least the department in itself, that they dispense information and make sure that they are training their staff to at least, you know, give them proper information so that they're able to report on these issues. Furthermore, for us as well, we just feel like, and also even if you go to the department's website in terms of trying to get information on how they're dealing with the Child Justice Act and engaging with children who have come in conflict with the law, it's very difficult to get information on the Department of Social Development because they're the ones who are mandated to deal with these children. So for us, we are very concerned about it, and particularly for us who are on the ground, we are very concerned with recent reports that have come from the BOSASA. I know BOSASA is a subcontractor for the DSD, but they are, of course, ultimately responsible for these children. And it is concerning that they have made no response to the right shocks that were used on the children in BOSASA, or the allegations at least that right shocks were used on children. And that is concerning and particularly of importance to the implementation of the Child Justice Act. So we need to understand what is going on in the centers. We as an organization and some of our partners have gone into offices and child justice centers where you can see a shambok behind someone's desk. You can see that force is used on children and that disciplinary measures are not just about what the act exactly mandates, but violence is used, and we need to understand what is being done. And part of it is, of course, as mentioned by my other colleagues, is training of the staff members, training and understanding human rights approach in dealing with the children as mandated by the Child Justice Act. And that is something that we are very much concerned about, is that there is no understanding with the staff on the ground. They do not understand, especially staff members that used to work in the previously reformatory type of system where they've now been integrated into the new system where the Child Justice Act and the Constitution is concerned. They seem to not understand that there is a change in the way, in the approach that they have to deal with children. They feel that it's forced upon them and that they, like, basically there's a big gap in terms of understanding what they have to do on a day-to-day basis. We are aware that the children have offended. We are aware of that, but there is a reason why we are trying to of course, you know, support a human rights approach in dealing with these children because we want them to reintegrate back into society as holistic individuals that are going to contribute positively to society. So we encourage that this training happens on the ground staff, that it just doesn't happen with managers and people that do not necessarily interact with the children, but people who interact with the children get access to proper training, and that training is not a once-off thing that we report on and say we did one training in this province, and as the trend we see in the annual reports, that it's an ongoing training, that there are trainers mandated for, and trainers and assessors in each center that ensures that, you know, proper procedures are being followed, that the act is being implemented and it's understood by the staff members, that the children as well participate and engage in the processes in terms of the Child Justice Act, that they understand as well, because part of it is that, like Section 69 mentions in the Child Justice Act, that it is to encourage the child as well to take responsibility. So it's not just a one-way thing on the department's side, but also that the children are made to understand, and this can only happen if the staff members understand and they're able to engage the children properly. We also just want to mention, particularly in terms of the right shocks incidents or the allegations that have been raised that the department has not responded, that we are concerned because of the recently enacted legislation around torture, that it does amount to torture. And if it comes out is that the staff members at BOSASA did torture these children with these right shocks, what is going to happen, and to ensure that they are prosecuted and brought to book, and that, you know, we send a clear message basically that our Child Justice Act is a progressive law that has been passed, and that we are putting our children first, and that we're ensuring that we are not, you know, perpetuating violence in our society. And this can only be done if proper investigation is not done, not just from the Human Rights Commission side, but from the department side, that it shows us they take this allegation seriously. Okay. we as an organization, we actually have started, you know, or embarked on a journey where we're starting to train care workers, basically, on the Child Justice Act and on other human rights issues so that they're able to be equipped. But this is not our mandate as an NPO. We're an activities-based organization. And as mentioned earlier, non-profit organizations are struggling financially to do this. So it is quite imperative that the departments take responsibility for these things and not leave it to non-profit organizations to do their jobs, but also where there are budgetary constraints, that they at least put minimum standards within their centers in order for them to at least engage on them and meet them, so that at least each year we are not finding a situation where we are always dealing with the same situation and dealing with the same attitudes from staff members. We do not necessarily deal with diversion directly, but of course we support diversion as an organization because we believe that imprisonment or any type of detention of any child must be a measure of last resort. So it is concerning for us that the diversion numbers have since gone down or that there seem to be some sort of administrative burden on the implementing agencies like the NTA and all of that need to do diversion. So, and it is noteworthy from the previous, from the intersectoral committee when they made the presentation around that the numbers have increased, but still we need to make a proper assessment of the quality of diversion programs and specifically to do with the NPOs that are not getting accredited and not meeting the accreditation standards because of the stringent rules that are concerned diversion. For you to be able to qualify to be a diversion program. For us, our major recommendation to the committee is specifically around information gathering and distribution, because it is our concern that there's not enough information being gathered and distributed to all stakeholders and public and the public in general. The flow of information can only enhance the implementation of the Act as all stakeholders will assess the information that is accurate from the relevant role players. We encourage that the gathering, capturing, distribution of information occurs. We also encourage the training of all officials in all departments concerned in the implementation of the Child Justice Act. We urge that constant training is necessary, as mentioned before, that budget issues are noted as reported in the annual reports. However, each department must make priority of its role in implementing the Act so as to ensure their discussion. So that means when they negotiate with Treasury and all of that, that's one of the core reasons they must always have at least at the center of their mandates that the Child Justice Act is part of their department's mandate and that they all negotiate wisely in terms of how they budget so that they make sure that at least the implementation of the Child Justice Act is budgeted for within their budgets. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, honorable members. You can engage with the presentation. Honorable Matilda Mkhobi.
Thank you very much. Let us welcome all the presentations. Let us firstly indicate I'm worried in terms of the presentations given to us here. I'm saying this precisely because just a few weeks ago, Chair, we were dealing with the issue around DNA tests because the presentation was made by the subs to us. And that's an area that will also affect children, and it's not part of this specific report, is how it will be affected into this particular program, dealing with children in particular. But it is also clear that across all departments, there's a lot of reliance on outsourcing. Because, you see, we ask the Department of Police, you have just asked for more than half a million for an IT system to be implemented. Since this parliament started, we asked the Justice Cluster to have a system where, you know, one arm knows what the other arm is doing. Now it is clear in this particular meeting, in terms of representations, that you have different information collecting systems and reporting systems in terms of the cluster itself. You see, that at the end of the day, you have this skewed data that is being given to us, which at some point might not be reliable. Some point we are not sure. It might be data that is properly collected and given, but you know, because the other arm does not understand that system clearly, might not even understand in terms of what we had in terms of the report itself here today. What becomes more worrying is this outsourcing situation. You know, because you see, we as a country and all our departments wants to rely on international best practice, wants to rely and make sure that they match what developed countries are doing, and not want to behave like a developing country, moving towards what those countries are dealing with. You see? And it does not mean that the developed countries did not move from somewhere moving to the point they are today. Some of them has not even reached that particular stage. We as a country have even surpassed those particular countries, you know. But how we surpass them, there's a lot of flaws in between. You see? Therefore, we can't close those specific gaps, which is a problem, which is a serious problem to me. And that is the reason why, even as a cluster, you don't give us the budget around how you're dealing with in implementing this particular act, how are you reporting back in terms of how this act has been. That is the reason why, because you can't quantify the budget in as far as that particular system is concerned, you know, which is a problem, because you might not even know at some point as to how much do you spend on outsourcing for in terms of the private sector, the veterinarians that we're talking about, the doctors and whoever we're speaking about in this particular. The Busasa program itself, as indicated to us, had a lot of problems in correctional services itself. Correctional services. Which is a problem. Now, if you give us just one part of the report, not a holistic report, you make it difficult to assist you in dealing with the issues you are trying to raise to us, the challenges you are bringing to ourselves. You see, because you are raising challenges. We must go back as a committee and then say, you know, to the department, we think this is what you need to do. We think this is, you know, so that we're also saying, we're able to say to Treasury, we think you're not budgeting correctly for this particular program. But how do we do it as a committee if you're not giving us proper information to deal here you're talking about five departments with five different IT systems. Are systems that are not talking to each other. That is what you are telling us. Now, you are talking about lack of infrastructure for specific programs. You are talking about the child centers and whatever. I can tell you now today, I'm not sure if education is there, but it's supposed to be part of your cluster, your grouping here. You know? The education department is sitting with a lot of primary schools that are empty, which can easily be changed to become those particular centers. They are becoming white elephants. They are becoming a problem to society. Now, I can easily tell you that this is the situation. I'm not so sure. Where are you doing your research? Where are you looking for the government buildings? Because we're saying there are no government buildings that can. But if you go through, I come from Gauteng. I can tell you, just in one township only, there are more than five schools, not close to each other, not close to the community, that are isolated, that you can turn into a center itself. Yeah? 10 schools sitting around it, 3 primary schools that have been closed down. Now, I'm not sure what is it that you're looking for. I heard you talking about 5 stars. This is the issue. When you start building prisons this day, you want to build prisons like you are building prisons in New York. While in New York, they are not building those particular prisons. We are sitting with a problem in Mangaung and in Limpopo, where you build 5-star prisons which are too costly, which are unmanageable, and therefore you outsource them, and there are serious problems with it. Now I'm saying you need to change and think differently. Think as a developing country and make sure that we implement. You see, the problem we are faced with as a country is we want to compete with people that we think that we won't be able to compete with now, you know, because we are developing and moving towards that specific area. I mean, they took 100 years to be where they are. Some took 200 years. We are less than 20 years, and we want to compete with them at that specific level. I think that is wrong. That is a wrong thinking. Now, health is not here to tell us what is it that they are doing in assisting your department to train the necessary, to bring in the necessary skills that you're talking about that justice must pay for. That is not your mandate to pay for that. That is not your mandate. Because you're diverting, you're taking money that is supposed to do something in justice, now you're paying for this particular program that health should have been dealing with. Social development, we are told now that, you know, there's a clear indication that there are these particular programs. Internally, what is it that you're doing? Because I know that very little you do a social development. Within social development, you are outsourcing a lot. And you come today, you create 100 NGOs. The next day you come, then you close them down, you create 4 or 5. We are not sure what is it that you're doing in social development. Now, I'm just asking these questions because in terms of the report itself, this report does not assist us to assist you or neither for us to engage properly and look at this particular report and say, this is how we think must happen in this around this specific report, you know, to can assist and make sure that there's a clear implementation around this Child Act, you know. Now, all these departments that are spoken about, the Department of Children, Women, you know, sometimes there's chaos in that department, you know. Because what they're supposed to do is to assist and monitor and assist this particular department. Their focus is to sit in New York, traveling around always. Now, I'm just saying, I think it is important that, and even your reporting, your way of reporting, when we analyze all the reports that you've brought to Parliament, on a specific issue, you report differently. You don't have a consistent way or simply way of saying, in terms of, for example, division. From this year, these are the issues, these are the challenges, these are the areas, this is how we improved on that. No, you come with a different reporting style on that specific area. You don't report, give us different reports on a specific issue. Now, how do we monitor whether you are improving, whether you're not building the capacity to make sure that you can implement that particular program or not? Chair, I've just asked specific questions precisely because I think it is important that people don't just come to Parliament and just report, you know. Give us the issues so that we are able to assist you. And the budget then, therefore, then becomes key and important in as far as, what is it that you have cut out from this NGO that you could not accredit to assist you, you know? What resources have you put under? Or what are the challenges that you had? What problems that this NGOs brought to the department that you think these were challenges and that you think, you know, were creating problems for yourselves as departments to implement this particular program so that we can deal with that situation and then assist you to deal with it. We don't know. You're not telling us that. You're just telling us so much has been accredited, so
much as so many has not been accredited. You're not giving us the reasons. You're not giving us the experience you have over the last 2.5 years or 3 years. You know, you're not giving us that. And a report must actually reflect those specific issues so that we can then have an understanding. We can go and do our own research again and look at those specific matters and then come back to you. But we expect you to write a report that will tell us exactly what the issues are. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. We are moving towards our end of the term. I'm missing the ministers in most questions. It's rare that we could have a minister in justice system cluster. I think that whoever is next to the minister must note that we are worried. Some of the issues here are highly political, and you are dealing with management and technical issues. That's that concern, that I'm going home next day, I haven't seen a minister yet, in most cases when we deal with these issues. Okay, my comment is that there is an issue that says national, provincial, and municipalities. This is a form. I don't know whether you'll be able to do it as intersectoral committee, because it does not work even now as three spheres, you know, especially at IGR level. How are you going to be able to do that? What is the point of planning to ensure that municipalities indeed are also play a role in this type of child justice system? I'm worried about that, because when we are failing at the level, political level of the IGR as three spheres, as this complicated technical legal system, where even municipalities are not even have that competency, how are we going to do that? That's one other point. The other thing, you're not giving the institutional weaknesses. Because I believe the institution might have its own challenges. The only thing that we see here is the strength. It's a good thing about the institution. That is what I'm going to do, this, the planning, this, the achievement, this will be the objective. We don't even know the structural weaknesses. Who takes decisions? If there is a dispute, especially from the, what you call ICC, yeah, ICCJ to the DG. If there is a dispute, how do you take it to the cabinet level, especially politicians? How do they come in to resolve intersectoral disputes? Because that is where we need to see what we call the structural strength of what we are going to do. Because some of these things, they're good, they're wisdom, you can explain. And sometimes people can research, they are academics and are right. But when we go to implementation, it becomes a problem. So that's why I said we also need to have a minister, whether it's deputy or whatever, so that some of these issues, they politically answer them. Because you might not be in a position, especially at your level, as HODs, to answer some of the political questions that we are asking. The other issue that I want to raise is like, I don't know whether I heard it correctly from the Alliance, as whether you were saying the old dispensation was doing things correct, or you were moving from the old system to the current system. Maybe if you could just unpack that. How do you sort of link the old reformatory system with the transformation system, and also maybe from the justice, what are the transformation objectives of the child of this approach? Precisely because of socioeconomic legacy that we have inherited. Does it speak to that? I think many committees, of course, departments are there. I don't know the role, whether it's not important that certain children can go to school, primary schools. If they can, how do we refer them to that? are they all going to be referred to the centers if they mature? Is there a mechanism to speak to the Department of Education to say, because of the low fee school policy, you don't need money there. How do you come in so that others could mature and go to school? Or is there any mechanism that are there to deal with that type of thing? Yeah, the other issue that I would want to raise, that my colleague has raised most of them, the budget. Today, I'm sure the minister is going to give us the budget. If he gives us the budget, is this project accommodated in the current budget? Because next annual report will say we have a constraint or a challenge in terms of budget. We can't implement what we've reported because of the budget. Is there anything? I think it's important that it needs to speak to budget so that we don't always get this thing amended, pass this law, comes law, but nothing is being implemented. In terms of special page 14, where you are saying on the 14th of October, slide 11, there are some challenges of intersectoral establishment and management. What are these challenges? Are you having a plan? What are these challenges and what are the plans to address these challenges in order to make sure that all these gaps that you find are really being addressed? But I would also want to make a recommendation to young in prison to say the role you're playing is very good, but I think where you see weaknesses, you shouldn't wait for this type of meeting. You must be able to petition committees of parliament, because in that way, it will be able to assist the entirety of the whole processes. But if you wait, you come next time, you'll wait for the annual year, get this type of a thing, and there is no time. Certain things that are not time, I think you need to petition to say, petition committee, these are the challenges that we found. Can't we be able to intervene on this type of thing so that we are able to build this society to that extent? I think the Bosasa issue has been raised. I'm also worried about that, because then we have so many service providers. A lot of money is taken by service providers rather than going where you are supposed to be platform. You know, this type of a thing. Can't we have an inbuilt mechanism of doing some of the functions that Bosasa is doing, so that indeed the resources are channeled towards rehabilitation and corrective measures on the very same children that we're talking about? Thank you.
Honorable Gunda, but before you go, Honorable Matita said there's one issue that he just wanted to make a follow-up on.
Nocha is around training, you know. Specifically, this issue is, there's a lot of, there's an issue that is being raised around training. We know now, there's a lot of training that must go into subs on different matters. Now, you know, we need subs to explain. Does IFSAP have the capacity to train? The minister has just announced this morning a university. This morning. A university to train police at management level, at a particular level. But we know in terms of DNA, there's a lot of training that must go in. That is for SARS, for health. Now it's fingerprinting. Now is this issue around the Child Act, whatever, and you have just indicated that there's training that is needed. Has there been, in terms of the cluster, have you planned already this particular training around the Child Justice Act for the entire cluster? Where are you now? What is the cost of training? Who's doing the training? Who is training Bosasa at the end of the day? Because, you know, correctional services train people differently, subs train people differently. But you were training Bosasa too to implement your programs at the child centers, you know, and how are they trained? Because my worry is there's a lot of training that is spoken about. Now, nobody is telling us people are trained, how are they trained, where are they trained, and, you know, what is going on. You know, and all departments seem to have a hand in as far as this specific training, because everybody else has to train people within the departments to deal with these specific issues. But nobody is telling us who is doing what is the content of the training, how are they going to be trained, when and how, whatever, will they meet the objectives of the act and whatever. You know, we don't know, you know, what is the budget for that specific training.
Honorable Gunda?
Chair, I don't think I've got questions. There are some questions that my colleagues have asked that I would like to ask. I've got a comment, Chair, to make, and I think this is a very important act. And Chair, children, is the our children is the future of this country. I'm really worried, Chair, when it comes to the different departments and the role that they are playing in developing our children. There's an act here, and if you listen to the department, how children are being in a preliminary hearing, how they've been treated, is a legal representative. My biggest concern here, Chair, is we waste millions of rands on consultants, millions. And we don't get value for money. That's my concern here, Chair. If you listen to the department's Chair, and I've listened to Child Alliance, I've listened to Young in Prison, and it comes back to one thing, Chair. We don't get value for money. My colleagues are talking about the money that's been spent, and Saps knows how many millions they've already wasted. Chair, you and me, this committee were in the prisons in Kimberley. We have seen the conditions of the children where they stay in, Chair. And now we listen to these people here, to the departments, they're telling us what this act is doing, but the environment where their children is being kept, it's not conducive, it's not hygienic, it's a total mess in the correctional services. I want to take them close to me, 800 meters from my house is a center for children who have made crimes, the Marcus and Better Center. I think I have five times, or more than five times, had to chase children in my car who's jumping over that wall from that, and I have to catch them and take them back. I think it's more than five times. I had services in that very same center. The conditions in that center, it's only clean, Chair, but the mattresses and the things, how they sleep on, Chair. And yet, we've got a child act that cost us millions. And unfortunately, Chair, it's our children who are there. And the future of South Africa depends on how they treat their children, how they develop their children, how important is our children. That's the future of this country. And I agree with my colleagues, we can't measure ourselves with the United States or with Germany. When we were in Germany, we were shocked the percentage of the children who are in prison in Germany. We were shocked. Let's forget about Europe. Let's think about Africa. The Nigerian president, when he was there, he told us they were shocked how many inmates we've got. We've got more than 100,000 of inmates in this country. They don't even have 40,000. And they are a bigger nation than us. So somewhere along the line, something has been done wrong, Jay. And all these briefings and all that doesn't speak to the core issues. How the act has been passed in 2008. What exactly has taken place in 1, 2, 3, 4? People need to be precisely with us and telling us exactly what has happened. Not giving us a long briefing, and in that briefing, we still need to find out what's happening. All I want to say, Chair, to the departments, please give us direct issues. We are not here to fight with you. We are here to assist you whatever you needed. But if you can't give us specifics, we can't assist you because we are not working in the departments where you are working daily. You are working there daily. And don't just budget for the officials. Budget for the things that you are supposed to do. And then you can come, as my colleague has said, you must summon or write a letter to the committee and say, we are struggling with this thing. Can you assist us? But there was not a single department in this past 5 years that has written a single letter to this committee to say, we are struggling with this. Can you assist us? We don't know what to do. And those are the issues that we really need to do. We are all South Africans. We all want to see there must be a bright future for this country. And if we want to do that, we must get our principles right in order to have a better future. Thank you, Chair.
I'm Jack. Honorable Chair, thank you. I'd like to thank the presenters of the presentations. I think that every one of them knows the subject and that they know the problems that they've got. But it's a great day to me that the opposition is moaning about the implementation of this law, and I like it. It's very nice that they're worried about it, as we are always talking about that. I think that we don't understand the problems that you've got in this law, in implementing this, because as I was listening, I've got the problem that the right of individuals is more important than the right of the country in this country. And we can't go on and on. Crime is a hell of a problem in this country. And I think you start at the right place, and if you're going to have problems, I admit that, but I'm worried about the statistics. I'm worried about what happened to a child, or if he reach 18 after that, and what is the outcome of your rehabilitation? Thank you.
Honorable Manzini. Thank you, Chair. I was listening attentively when one of the presenters talked about that now. He has seen a shambok just next to a chair. I'm a little bit worried. In 1994, the then Minister of Education took away the shambok and left the teachers with nothing but expected them to keep discipline. What is it that this Child Justice Act or these departments are doing to help the parents that they have to keep discipline without using any force? Or are we just taking it theoretically without practice? So that's my main worry. It's like when this OBE was introduced in schools. I was very worried because it failed in many countries. But someone or ministers who went abroad thought maybe that was the right thing to bring it along to our country. That is the reason why, if we compare education nowadays and even education before 1994, we see just the difference. Because people were passing, we did have quality education sometimes, even though it was not good for, not the best for the black child. But what is it that now you are doing as department, let's say, to implement this, when coming to, let's say, about looking after the children and the like? It's good that, in fact, we are looking after our children. But what is it that we are doing practically, not theoretically? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Let me take the opportunity to thank all the presenters. All the presentations put together are an eye-opener of the challenges and the weaknesses in the system. And as one member has said that we are not here to blame the department. The issue of children in conflict with the law is the society's problem. And we will be failing in our oversight responsibility if we don't raise some of the issues that we have identified in the presentations with the powers that be. It is mind-boggling that in some of the presentations there are problems with the centers where these young people should be accommodated, but as one member has also already indicated, there are schools that are lying around in the country. We were in Gauteng last month. He was not part of our team, but the team that I was leading, we also happened to pass a school that was locked, and there were no children in the school. A lot of them are lying and dilapidating in the country, and this shows that there is lack of communication between our departments about the facilities that the Department of Education is having, which can be transferred to other departments. One of the reports also indicated the delay in the transfer of the reform schools. Why does it take so long for the Department of Education to transfer those facilities? I think our researcher and content advisor have noted some of those issues that have been raised, and we are going to meet again as a committee to isolate those issues and present them to the specific departments. And maybe time allowing, we will have time. I think it is necessary, honorable members, that we meet this delegation again with the departments that are not here, SAPS, Education and Health. Oh, SAPS is here, Education and Health, so that those issues that have been raised, we get responses from the relevant departments why there are delays in some of the issues that are expected to happen, to ensure that this piece of legislation is effective. If it does not work, we will be failing the children of this country, and we will be failing the future of this country. Let me once again take the opportunity to thank you again, and this brings us to the end of the meeting, subject. Thank you very much. I would request the members to remain for 2 minutes.